Coming up this week, Trevor Dan is joined by guests from Audio Boom, Fix Radio and Tonic Productions for our monthly roundtable discussion for October. Lots to talk about. Also, James Cridland asks if you're in radio to deliver ratings and revenue or to delight the audience. And David Lloyd has more classic audio in Radio Moments.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
But first, we're back from London and in the warmth of our studios. I'm Stuart Clarkson at Radio Today in the north. Roy Martin, our founder and editor at Radio Today in the south. We've got the country covered, kind of, haven't we?
We have indeed. Hello, Stuart Clarkson in the north.
It's good to be back in the north. Hey, some big news this week. Zoe Ball, apparently.
Why? What's happened? I thought it was Sarah Cox.
Is it? Oh, hang on. Confusion here. Sarah's just tweeted breaking news. Sarah says, I did get the show. Zoe's just filling in for the 42 weeks I'm on holiday.
That's it. 10-week a year show for Sarah. Well done, Sarah Cox, everybody.
Well done, Sarah.
Yeah, big news. Big news.
Yes. So not quite as big as the shock that we had last month when Chris announced he was leaving, but here's what happened Wednesday morning on the Radio 2 Breakfast Show at 8.15.
Your brand new host of the Radio 2 Breakfast Show as of January next year is Zoe Ball! Good morning, Zoe!
Hello, Chris! This is bonkers, can I just say?
How are you feeling?
I am a crazy mix of elation, wanting to burst into tears, thinking about running away, everything. Yes.
All right.
But mainly thrilled. Yeah. All night, I've not been able to sleep because you know what I've been singing to myself all night?
Come on.
How do you like your eggs in the morning? I like mine with a kiss.
Well, good for you. All right. Tell us when and how, as much as you want to. Don't tell us what you don't want to.
Well, do you know what? I think if we go back to the mic drop moment of you saying you were going, which when the whole nation went, huh? What? And so from that point on, I think everyone was like, well, what's going to happen? And I have to say, to be totally honest with you, I didn't think you were ever going to go. And I don't think anyone did. And so from that point on, you start thinking, oh, what are they going to do? And I definitely didn't expect to get a call. But getting a call was an amazing thing. And then, of course, you think, I can't do it. I can't. Oh, how could I do it? Could I do it? And the best person I spoke to during that time was my son, Woody.
Right.
He's nearly 18. You know, wasn't even alive when I was at Radio 1 doing the Breakfast Show. And he said, Mum, come on. Don't even think about it. It's like the coolest thing you could do.
Yeah.
Be the first girl, you know, on Radio 2 Breakfast. It's amazing. And he went, and Mum, and he looked into my eyes and he held my hand. He went, someone will listen.
It's
very sweet.
Lots of people will listen.
So there we are, Zoe, the new Radio 2 Breakfast presenter. She's going to be quite good at it, I reckon, Roy.
I think so, yeah. Just listening to the clip, she was very loud, bubbly and happy. And hopefully she'll be like that every morning. And a nice breath of fresh air for Radio 2 in the morning. Do you think people will stay with Radio 2? Or do you think they'll go off to Virgin with Chris?
I think Chris will take some listeners with him, the big Chris Evans fans, but I think a lot of people listening to that show are listening because it's the Radio 2 Breakfast Show and the music it plays and the stuff it does and the features it does and that kind of stuff. So I don't think she's going to get a massive drop in audience, to be honest.
Do you think Chris will have his own playlist? Do you think Chris will carry on playing Radio 2 middle of the road music? Or do you think he'll have to play the rest of the Virgin style and put off any listeners coming across?
I don't know. I think the Virgin music playlist has changed a bit even in the last 6 months or so, since they've had a bit of a change round in programming director and a new head of music as well, I think, at Virgin. So I think they've already tweaked it, so it's not the kind of indie station it was when it first launched. So I think Chris will fit in quite well. There were some reports this week he's already thrown his weight about and saying he wants the studio made bigger or something. So
who wouldn't?
And it is interesting, of course, because you've got Zoe and Chris up against each other on Virgin and the BBC, just like they were back in 98.
It's a little bit of history repeating.
And, of course, for everybody who's listening to this, who works in breakfast radio or in commercial radio or other bits of the BBC, massive opportunity to do something different with your breakfast show and attract some listeners, get some marketing out there and find some people who are thinking, oh, well, I don't really want that. I don't want to go with him on that station. You might pick up some new audience.
Yeah, a period of change and uncertainty.
And of course, there's Greg James, fairly new on Radio 1. There's Lauren Laverne taking over in 2019 on Six Music. So it's all change everywhere.
It really is. So good luck to everybody with your new breakfast shows. Where's your new breakfast show, Stu? Can you get
on? Still Radio Bedroom. Still me talking to myself in the shower, talking over the intros of the songs.
As ever. Well done. Yeah, good stuff.
Okay, lots to come on the Radio Today programme this week. That's a quick bit from me and Roy. We will return with more chat next week and maybe Stu versus Roy if we can get anybody to play games with us. James Cridland and David Lloyd still to come on the Radio Today programme. First, it's roundtable time and time to meet the panel who are with the one and only Trevor Dan.
Thank you, Stuart. Welcome to the October roundtable. We're back at Jazz FM in central London. Let's see who is round that table.
I'm Gloria Abramoff. I'm the Managing Director of Tonic Productions. We make content for the BBC and for corporates and charities, mainly about public engagement and social action.
I'm Ruth Fitzsimons. I'm the SVP of International Ops at Audioboom, and we're a podcast platform.
I'm Paul Chandler. I'm a consultant trainer, been in the business for about 35 years, and I'm a director of Fix Radio, which is the radio station for tradespeople and builders.
And you've got a little exclusive news nib, haven't you, for us later? But we'll hold off on
that. Nice tease, Trevor. Nice tease.
I want to start with Ruth, because I interviewed you at Next Radio, and it was a fascinating interview, I thought. You were very open about all sorts of things. And then when I got home, it hadn't recorded. Aww. I mean,
what
happened to all of us?
Awful. It's so awful when that happens.
Well, it was entirely my fault, I'm sure. Anyway, the great thing about Audio Boom, Ruth, is you're still here.
And
there was a moment this year when it looked like it wasn't going to work. How are you feeling now? Confident?
Yeah, we had a tough year, but, you know, honestly, very confident, and it's very nice to be able to sit here and say that, because I think, as anyone who's been in the audio industry knows, there are tough times, and I think, especially in a nascent industry, there are going to be times when things get tough. But actually, and I don't just mean this in kind of, you know, oh, it's never been better, but actually it really does feel like the ship has kind of steadied and things are much better. You know, earlier this year, for anyone who wasn't aware, we were in the middle of takeover talks with Triton, and Triton is a platform out of the US that does a lot of ad serving and hosting, and we were looking at a reverse acquisition as part of that deal. And I think, although initially everyone goes into these things with the very best intentions, the reality is as that deal progressed, I think our board started to look at it and think, was it really the best deal for the shareholders that were involved, and also for the direction of travel for the business? And very painfully, in a sense, we had to say no at the end and walk away from it. And, you know, when you do say no to those deals as an AIM listed company, you know, it does have an impact. And that impact is not just the financial impact, of which most of it was in shares rather than cash, but also the reputational and the exhaustiveness of these deals, because it really does take a huge amount of time and effort by senior management once you're involved in those. And that has a trickle down effect on how much you can grow, and also on confidence within the marketplace and confidence within our partners. And we ran into a cash flow issue, and, you know, we were very honest about that, and it was very painful. But the one thing I will say is I really can be thankful for the amazing relationships we have with our podcasters. You know, it's a real testimony to them as well as to our teams, who spent a huge amount of time helping them and helping them try to grow their podcast, but also the faith our podcasters put back in us, that they stayed with us during that time period.
Well, on behalf of all your podcasters, of which we are one, thank you for that vote of confidence. But Paul, you, by the way, thank you for being so candid. Paul, you've seen an article, as we all have, about, hey, the podcast bubble, has it burst?
Yes, it was in the Columbia Journalism Review a couple of weeks ago, and it was basically saying that companies like Slate and BuzzFeed and Audible have cut back their podcasting operations and cut staff. And I assume this is because of the lack of monetization, or the fact they can't monetize. And we all know that that is a problem in terms of some of these bigger companies who are involved in podcasts. But I think there's also another problem. I don't know whether other people agree with me in that I always think that podcasts, unlike videos and unlike newspaper articles or anything like that, are very difficult to share on social media, are very difficult to, get a viral podcast going. And I think that is part of the problem.
I think you might disagree with that.
Yeah, I think I probably would disagree with that. And I think, let's just start at the first point, which is the money point. And I think realistically, some of those particular organizations have chose to remove themselves from podcasting less about the money and more about a strategic perspective from them, because the money has actually probably never been in a better position. If we just look at in the US, the IAB number that they'll have come out from tracking podcast spend in 2017, that will be about 250 million. And this year we'll end up nearly hitting 500 million. Here in the UK, our sales just for Audioboom alone are up in the first half of this year by 177%. 177%.
Why? How did that happen?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think it happened for a few different reasons. So the first is the accessibility has changed. You know, one thing is podcasts are easier to find now than they have been in the past. And also we have phones that allow us to download that information. It's a bit easier for us to carry it around. So it's not just Apple coming into the space, but also Spotify coming into this space. I think we're all particularly interested to see what happens when Google comes into this space. But also, I think for advertisers, what they have seen is, it kind of leads to your second point, Paul, in a sense, is that although these podcasts aren't viral in the sense of kind of one-hit wonders, they are a part of people's lives. So, you know, on average, we find things like a number of studies that say 33% of people listen to 7 podcasts a week. So it becomes habit forming. When something's habit forming, you have a continuous audience that's very tuned in. And the thing about podcasts is, as I always say, no one has ever accidentally listened to a podcast. That's just really hard to do. You have to kind of go somewhere, you have to find it, you have to press play. It's not like something you just switch on really quickly. And so that audience that's engaged, the advertisers that are coming to that audience are finding really high rates of engagement that they struggle to maybe get somewhere else with a higher share of voices.
But aren't a lot of advertisers demanding more metrics and stuff like that in order to spend money?
I guess it depends on where they're coming from. In comparison to radio, there probably are a lot more metrics in comparison to that. There are still quite a few metrics, although I do take your point that podcasting has not solved that problem completely. In terms of metrics, what you do generally get back are things like, you know, location of listen, the number of listens. Most podcast platforms have now adopted an IAB standard for listening. So in general, that's starting to standardise across the industry in terms of what is quantified as a listen. But 60% of podcast listening takes place in Apple. Apple does not share all of that information back to the, you know, the likes of kind of podcast platforms like ourselves. So usually that information then is contextualized between the other listening devices that we hear people on. But advertisers get quite a lot of information back. But it is a good point. You know, the reason why most podcast advertisers to date have been subscription services is because they could count it. They could see when someone actually went and did it. But we are starting to see newer podcasters come in, newer advertisers come in.
Bit of a handbrake turn this, but from podcasting to BBC local radio, although actually they have just announced that they're going to start a new podcast, and what a curious idea it is. Gloria makes retching mimes as I speak.
What's it going to be? It's the best of...
Oh, it's the best of local radio. What a great idea that is. That worked for them on their shared evening show, didn't it? No, we're all shaking our heads. Gloria, your friend Chris Burns is now taking on the, do we say the poison chalice? It's the new job. It's called Head of Local Radio, and it has, in the great tradition of BBC senior management, it has dotted lines.
Well, it has a dotted
line. So what can
possibly go
wrong?
I must confess that I phoned Chris last night.
Oh, did you?
Well, we all love Chris. We wish
her
well.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
But...
Genuinely, I think it's a great appointment because I've worked with Chris for several years in so many different capacities.
Oh, you were running the Radio Academy when she was its chair.
Yeah. She genuinely was amazing. I could not have done it without her support and her strategic mind. I mean, she's got an incredibly strategic mind in the way that I haven't.
So what did she leak to you then about her strategy for the...
No, she wouldn't. She's not that stupid. She, as I just said, she's got a strategic mind and I'm probably the last person.
BBC Local Radio is probably the last thing that needs any strategy. It's suffered from quite a few strategies, hasn't it?
No, but I think what Chris understands is the entire BBC. I think one of the challenges that Local Radio had was their own PR within the BBC. Mm. And Chris, because she understands the BBC so well and has worked at a very senior level, you know, remember she was Anne Bulford's chief assistant. So Chris is incredibly good on relationships. Quite honestly, I really do think it's a great appointment.
What's the first job in her in-tray then, Glo?
I think the first thing is that people are going to be suspicious of her. And I think she's going to have to try and demystify who she is. I think she's going to have to do a lot of travelling.
Should she be desyndicating the ideas in local radio? Should she be letting the creative, locally based producers off the hook and saying, go on, respond to your community. We'll stop being as top down as we've been.
I hope so.
Let's see what Paul thinks.
Well, I think a lot of people are frustrated with BBC Local Radio in the radio industry because it has such enormous potential and the audience figures on a lot of stations seem to go down or stay the same. There are some notable exceptions, of course. And I know, Trevor, that you're very much an advocate of creating reach in local radio moving away from what I think you described in one blog as the dark arts of commercial radio's quest for hours and so on. And I think you're right. And I think the return to the brass band hour and things like that in order to create appointments to listen on BBC Local Radio is quite a good idea, good strategy. And from what Tony Hall said at the Gillard Awards last year in Coventry, it seems he thinks the same. This silo of specialist programming in order to draw people in of all ages, that's not a bad strategy. Where it falls down, and the big problem I have with BBC Local Radio, someone who's worked in it as well, is that no one seems to bring it all together. It doesn't stick together very well. When you judge the Gillards,
sorry,
as I've done...
Can I just pick up on that?
Sure.
Sorry, what do you mean by bringing it all together when actually they want to remain autonomous?
No, so I mean within a station and creating a station sound, creating in a way that commercial radio does so well.
Here's a theory then. Because you've run stations, and you've consulted stations, and you've spoken and presented on radio stations. Let me offer you this theory, that what went wrong with BBC Local Radio was they got rid of all the people who understood music and radio and replaced them with people who understood ambulance chasing and press releases.
Well, it went to the news division, didn't
Correct.
It?
Correct.
And I think that was, you know, news is obviously a very important part of local radio, but it's not necessarily local radio. And what I find frustrating when I listen to it, and I do listen to my local station BBC Kent a lot, and Surrey and Sussex, and they're very good. BBC Kent under Gordon Davidson, very good manager, and they sound very good. But other stations just don't sound the same. And it's all this, and I exaggerate, but it's very much this, now, here are we in our ivory tower talking down to you in your little home.
Because you're old.
Because you're old, and we need to speak in a certain way.
That's right.
And really, that are we still in... And I thought that we'd left that behind, but you still hear it. And it's incredibly frustrating. Whenever I've tried to offer services or help to them, they always say no, because they don't... They think they know it all.
Well, you're far too brash.
Far too expensive.
Ruth, do you ever hear BBC Local Radio? Is it something that impinges on your life?
So I think this is where kind of BBC Local Radio kind of has to really think about, how does it attract a younger audience that might not necessarily even turn on a radio? You know, like that's the reality. There are lots of people who are under a certain age who will not have a radio in their home. They will still listen to audio, don't get me wrong. They are big audio consumers. They are listening on a number of different devices, and they may even listen to certain radio stations on devices. But what I'm saying is, how do you get across to them that this is something for them? And I will say that although in one sense, you know, the idea of Multi-Story, which is their new BBC radio podcast, might be a good idea. I wonder whether munging together all of those local
Great.
Radio stations is really a good idea.
A prize for the first use of the word munging. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. That's made my day, munging.
I just think
well,
the thing
right,
is this niche.
Those ideas, they just don't ever work.
But people listen to people, and it's a question of creating the personalities that young people want to listen to. Moyles did a great job on Radio 1 Breakfast Show because he was, it's unexpected. You didn't know what you were going to get when you tuned in, and it had all of those qualities that great personality radio has. And it seems to me that that's the kind of injection that BBC local radio needs, because it gets promoted after the local TV news every night.
One of the
great
things
promotion
I have enjoyed very much in the last couple of years is the sound of experts running very hard backwards to undo the great truth that young people don't listen to speech.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I am expecting that those very same people will or could be forced to accept that young people are interested in speech about the communities they live in.
Yes.
And that the problem
absolutely
with local radio
has to be relevant.
Is that it's done in that bedside manner, and it doesn't engage somebody who's maybe 25 but does care what's going on in their town.
I think the thing is, you just have to look at the reality of, look, if they were to look to the podcasting world, there are loads of what you could call regional or local podcasts. For example, something like, everything from football, like the Anfield Wrap or True Geordie. These are really, really big podcasts that deal with local issues. But I think one of the things that we need to do is, again, it has to be relevant. It also has to feel like it's made for them. You know, you don't want to alienate everyone in the community, but at the same time, I think some of the things is trying to do everything for all, to be all things for all people, can sometimes be a struggle.
Ruth Fitzsimons and Gloria Abramoff and Paul Chandler are with me. It's the Radio Today Roundtable for October, and we'll be back with more natter after this.
Yes, back with Trevor in a moment. First, a quick word about Clean Feed. If you've not heard about it, it's really good. If you're doing OBs, interviews, co-hosting your show from somewhere different to the normal studio location, then Clean Feed can help you out. It's designed for radio and for podcasters, and it's really simple to connect live audio over the web. The quality is fantastic, and you can even record right within the browser using Clean Feed as well. It doesn't cost you anything to get started, and it'll only take you 30 seconds, a minute to get signed up and doing your first live interview straight away. You can find out more about it at cleanfeed.net. That's cleanfeed.net. Trevor.
Well, we've talked about changes at the top of BBC local radio. Changes also at the top of the Radio Academy. We've got the ARIAs coming up in a couple of weeks. You and I, Gloria, are both former chief execs, and so shortly will be Roger Cutsforth. Who do you think they should appoint to be the new part-time chief executive of the Radio Academy?
I don't think I can give you a name, Trevor, but I can give you the skills that I think they should go for. I think that it's really important that the person they appoint is somebody who really understands relationships and understands how to bring quite a fragmented industry together. I think if they can find somebody that can bring global back to the table, that would be incredibly helpful. I admire Roger for the work that he's done for the ARIAs and for 30 Under 30, and I admire him for bringing in revenue. But I find that the job advert, which starts with income generation, that actually upsets me. And I think if that's where the emphasis is, that is a rocky road, and that does worry me for somebody who cares so much about an industry working together, lobbying together, campaigning together, being together, having really good debates. I think what the Radio Academy has lacked in the last few years is those opportunities for workshops and masterclasses and real debate and accountability. You know, I know that Audio UK have been really good at, you know, those occasional masterclasses, but where we used to have the managers, the new talent, presenters, people coming and putting forward their case and being accountable and having the opportunity for questions, I think that's just lost and nobody else is doing that. And I hope that we can find somebody who's got that kind of creativity and that kind of vision.
Paul Chandler.
I don't know.
No, I'm not putting you forward for the job.
I'm very welcome to do so. No, I agree with Gloria. I think we've lacked a little bit of Yeah, I do admire what Roger's done in terms of some of these things with arias and so on. It's such a shame Global isn't involved with them. But I agree with Gloria that there seems to be a lack of the debates, the old style radio festival academy stuff. And that worries me as well. And it needs someone who can straddle the industry, BBC and commercial radio. John Myers, John Simons, people like that. Someone who's respected in the BBC as well as commercial radio.
But you've got to be careful. There's a next generation of John Simons and John Myers and Trevor Dant and Gloria Abramoff.
Absolutely.
You know, and they are there and they should be encouraged.
Perhaps the Radio Academy should become a podcast.
Well, we know a few people who could help promote that. Ruth, you work in audio. Does the Radio Academy have any appeal to you? Do you feel part of it?
You know what? In fairness to Roger, he really made an effort to try and kind of involve, podcasters within that. But I'm not sure it's there yet. You know, he did make overtones towards it and he did really try and make an effort to do it. But I think you only have to look at the lineup for podcasting in the ARIAs nominations to really understand that. Most of those are actually radio stations that have created podcasts and they've put it in. So one of the issues is that within the podcasting sphere, the biggest podcasters aren't looking towards the ARIAs as something they want to win. And I think that would be important because I think then that talks it up and people start to see the Radio Academy as a whole as something that's worthwhile being a part of. And I think one of the things that we need to start thinking of is radio is definitely the biggest part of that pie, 100%. By no means am I saying it isn't. But I'm saying that in the audio space at the moment, there is also newspaper groups. There are also, you know, kind of individual podcasters and influencers. And, you know, if you really want to tackle that audio listening as a whole, you need to be talking to those and the likes of Spotify.
Well,
you can't pretend they don't exist.
The Audio Production Awards, which is run by Audio UK, so full disclosure, of which I'm the secretary, we've had a huge spike in entries this year. Mm. And they include some of the people you just talked about, people who want to win an APA more than they want to win an ARIA, because they think of ARIA as the old Sonys and they think of audio production as being something that's a bit cooler or more modern, I'm guessing.
What do you think they should do then?
She's pointing at me.
Isn't it? Gloria's pointing at Trevor. I mean, I think Ruth's point is a really good point, but you've got experience, Trevor, of both Audio UK, Radio Academy. You know the industry really well. So I'm going to ask you the question.
Well, I think the Radio Academy is in serious existential danger because its biggest player by a long, long way in the commercial sector will not play with them. And I don't know how you get around that issue. I truly don't. And while it's trying to reorganise itself, along have come a revivified Audio UK and the podcast awards that Matt and Matt run. And it seems to me that the industry is changing and the Radio Academy is still trying to catch up.
But then it could reinvent itself.
Well, it could do. And I think your point about going for somebody younger is absolutely true. I think us lot are finished. We should go.
No, I don't think it's not about younger in age.
But I do think I think it's got to be more sociable.
Absolutely.
When I was running it and we had our, you know, monthly socials, you know, in the Gibson Room and then the pub afterwards and all that kind of stuff, there was a real sense of that, yes, this was the industry all coming together and having a beer and a chat and it was convivial and there was genuinely, horrible old word, fellowship. Now I think that's pretty much all gone. And I also think that whoever runs it, I'm sorry to say this, should be based in London. Because this is where the industry is based.
Absolutely.
And I don't think you can run the Radio Academy
Absolutely.
From Leeds. No. I think Roger's had a good go at it, but, you know, I'm not sure. Let's move the subject on to commercial radio. And in this particular case, how do we think Eddie Mair is doing at LBC? Have we heard?
I'm a regular listener to Eddie Mair. I was a regular listener on Radio 4. I think he settled in well among the world of commercials and jingles and live reads for their charity day and stuff. But he still sounds a little awkward with callers. And these callers to LBC aren't the same kind of callers that ring Any Answers. You know, I don't want to say anything more than that, but you know what I mean. And Eddie is a very clever chap, and it seems as though he has a little difficulty. It just sounds a little, as I say, awkward. And I think that he ought to heed the words of the great 70s crooner Val Dunican. I interviewed him once when I was in hospital radio when I was about 16, and I asked him, is there something that's carried him through his career? And he said, yes, there was. There's a phrase that he had printed and put as a sign above his desk, and that phrase was, never forget why they liked you in the first place. And what Eddie is good at is forensic interviewing of politicians, empathetic interviewing of what the BBC rather patronisingly call ordinary people. He's very clever in terms of his writing, and he's self-deprecating, and he's all of those things on LBC, but I think the callers get in the way a bit, and I think it lacks a little bit of production and heavyweightedness, but it's still the same Eddie.
Ruth.
I will just say that I used to work for LBC, so I should, you know, kind of cards on the table. And I actually think that's a very hard thing to move into from the BBC, because, you know, one of the things is you don't have 10 people outside of your, you know, kind of the studio helping to make and put that together. So it's a much leaner team. And the other thing is, you know, it's also technically demanding. It's very technically demanding to hit all of those different marks while being empathetic, while trying to be forensically interviewing someone. But what I am really impressed on is, I think, his tone. I think, you know, for LBC, that's a really good signing. I think he brings a very mature tone to the station and one of balance. And I think on a station that does have so many diverse voices, from a James O'Brien to a Nigel Farage, having someone who feels like they're more interested in the facts rather than the emotion. He's very good with callers at kind of saying, OK, but tell me a little bit more. What on the packaging, you know, when he's talking about allergies, on the packaging, did they say that? What was there? And he talks and coaches them through. Not in a patronising way, more in a, I'm trying to get to the truth of the matter. And I think people will appreciate that.
Go.
Yeah, I just think he's, I mean, I agree with both of them, and so beautifully said. I wish I could be that articulate. But I think what he brings is his BBC Balance experience, which LBC, I think, needed in a way. So he's not shouty, and you don't know what his politics are. However,
that could turn out to be a weakness, though, on LBC.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Mm. But that'd be interesting to see what happens.
Paul.
But I just want to say that I do mourn him on Radio 4. I really miss
well,
him.
Well, I was going to bring on...
You know, I mean, I'm really happy that Evan...
Evan Davis, is
Evan's
that a good
fabulous
call?
Choice. And I'm glad it wasn't a gender choice. I'm glad they chose the right person, because I think Evan is absolutely the right person.
Totally agree with that. And I love the way that Evan does that business show on...
Brilliant.
I forget what it's called. But he does brilliant interviews on that, and I'm sure that'll be reflected on PM. I was just going to say, Trevor, quickly that you're right, it was absolutely a great signing. What I wish they'd done, and I think I mentioned this to James Rea years ago when he was thinking of sort of hiring Eddie, is to not just hire Eddie, but do what the Americans do in television, a hire the top producers with him as a package, and that might help actually strengthen the team and the quality of the production. And I think part of the awkwardness is Eddie just trying to gel with the LBC people, who are very good but of a different style.
I want to just ask you briefly what you think of the demise of what we used to call the Pepsi Chart Show. Most recently it's been called Vodafone's Big Top 40. Is this the end of commercial radio syndication?
I think that, it still gets an audience, a big audience on both BBC and commercial radio, the chart, but it's become increasingly, I won't say irrelevant, it's become not very credible. You know, can you, what's the number one, Trevor?
No idea.
Anyone else?
George Ezra.
No. Do you know
Dennis Roussos?
No,
I don't think that I've followed a chart at all.
It's actually Calvin Harris and Sam Smith and Promises. But, you know, are charts as relevant now?
I don't think so.
They are in the sense that you still have to sell 100,000 units to get to number one, and you know, 100 streams equals one unit, one sale. So there's still an achievement there, but I just don't hear people talking about it or referencing it anymore.
OK, we're going to have to move on. You've all been marvellous, and we've been going 30 minutes already. But before we go on to what we've been listening to, you want to plug something, Paul.
I do, which is my new book, which is...
You've got one sentence to do that.
It's a easy to understand guide to media law for not only radio people, but also podcasters and social media users. I think everyone thinks that the biggest danger in radio are the journalists, but it's not. The journalists are usually trained and they have to write scripts and deliver them. The biggest danger is Johnny Jock on Radio Nowhere commenting on something he's read on Twitter about the local mayor and getting his radio station a legal action. And part of the reason for writing the book is to try and educate that and tell
and
people
as you
what
said,
they can and can't
it's do. Relevant to podcasters as well.
Podcasters, which is, social media users.
Because there's absolutely no help out there for
and
us,
also community it? Radio people as well. You know, you find a lot of the big groups like Bauer and Global now doing legal training, but the smaller groups don't, and certainly the community radio groups aren't doing as much.
After this commercial message, I want to hear your big story. The great reveal happens shortly.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Gloria Abramoff and Ruth Fitzsimons and Paul Chandler are here, and you've got a reveal, Paul.
Quick reveal, yes, from the 11th of November, I'm involved in a new radio station. It's an online station called Property Radio. It's not to do with fixed radio, although there is a connection. Property Radio will look at everything from building it, selling it, buying it, decorating it, going to it abroad, all sorts of things. It'll be online and on an app, but for 6 hours each week. On a Sunday afternoon on fixed radio, it'll also be on DAB. And we are looking forward to it. One of our presenters is Jenny Lee Grace from Radio 2. And we've got some very exciting things as well.
We wish you every success
Thank
with
you.
That. Now, it's
Can
just...
I reveal something?
Well, if you must.
Yeah, I mean, can I tell you about my new podcast series for the BBC?
Yes,
that we're doing?
Yeah, well, yes, let's have a plug. Plug fest.
Nina, Nina, we're not listening.
Paul's been plugging. So we're doing a health and wellness series for the BBC called All Hail Cow that starts in November as part of BBC Sounds, presented by Tim Samuels, and it's a Tonic production.
Very good. And what would you like to reveal?
Well, actually, today is the launch of Audioboom's big new original. It's called Dead Man Talking, and it is a really amazing podcast. It's presented by Alex Hannaford, who interviewed the railroad killer in America who crisscrossed America in the 80s and 90s and bludgeoned a lot of people to death. Very hideous man. But on his death row, he confessed to additional murders. And one of the things is, by our standards, we think, oh my God, someone's confessed, this must be true. But in America, quite frequently when this happens, people do it to prolong their stay of execution. And so the real question is, did he commit these murders or is he taking Alex for a ride?
And is that one of your two choices for this week?
Well, it has to be. Come on.
I think it does. Right, here's a clip.
I imagined that when I met him for the first time, I would at least sort of see this, you know, monster as a cliche, but certainly somebody who was capable of these brutal crimes that he'd been convicted of. And yet, here was this small, diminutive guy who was overweight and very softly spoken and didn't seem physically capable of these crimes at all.
And they got a breaker system here in Dallas-Fort Worth area where all the trains meet. That if you want to go almost to any place in the United States, you can go from there real fast.
Okay.
Sometimes I used to chop some bodies and throw them in swamps.
Which swamps?
That's Ruth's first clip, which is called Dead Man Talking.
Mm-hmm.
Follow it now on Audio Boom. We'll go to your first one, Paul.
Mine is a similar true crime listen, a podcaster with a difference. It's called Countdown to Capture. And I was in the States a couple of weeks ago and I heard this on the CBS Evening News, the TV news. And it's about a murder of a man murders his wife and is arrested and bailed, leaves behind three children. And he skips bail. And he's on the run. And the difference with this podcast, it's similar in style to Serial and S-Town and on Netflix, The Staircase and Making a Murderer. But the difference is this one is made by the Newport...
The presenting sponsor of Pod Save America is ZipRecruiter. A former president once said...
Shall I start again?
We were just going to ask whether older people can manage to get podcasts on their smartphones, and there's the proof.
Leave it in for us.
Sorry.
Well,
she was so keen. She was looking at Glow was looking it up.
ZipRecruiter as well.
Okay,
I did actually listen to it. I thought it was brilliant.
Look, because we're so short of time, let's have a clip, shall we?
No, but hang on. I need to say the difference, because that's the most important thing. The difference is that this one's made by the police as an appeal. It's made by the Newport, I was going to say Newport Pagnell Police Department, the Newport Beach Police Department in California. And it's voiced by their spokesperson, Jennifer Manzella. And she makes a great job of telling the story. The music's there and it's the interviews are there. It just sounds fantastic. And it was a six-parter and it's available now.
Here's Countdown to Capture.
Task forces are formed for a variety of reasons. Child abductions, police officers killed in the line of duty, narcotics enforcement. Basically, any time an investigation will consume a single agency's resources and capabilities.
In law enforcement, we work together. Teamwork is a force multiplier and part of why we are so successful. In November of 2017, it was a task force that brought the Newport Beach Police Department together with the Orange County District Attorney's Office, the United States Marshals Service, the Department of Homeland Security, the State Department, the U.S. Attorney's Office, and Interpol. We all joined forces for one reason, to capture Peter Chadwick.
No one can avoid capture forever.
Let's have another one from you, Paul, quickly.
Very quickly, I listened to the new Desert Island Discs presented by Lauren Laverne on Sunday. She did a great job. I think one of the reviewers said that her first link sounded as though she'd been handed a very precious porcelain vase and she didn't want to drop it, but she relaxed a little bit after the intro. She had diver Tom Daly as her guest. She was very matey with him, drew him out. I think she did a fantastic job. Again, though, I think the reviewer said, we like the first mate doing it, but we miss the captain, Kirsty Young. So I hope that Kirsty gets better soon. But I think Lauren did an excellent job.
You can also take a luxury. What's yours going to be?
Well, I would like to take my whole kitchen, including all cookware, but we can't do that. That's a little bit too much.
I'm new to this. It's my first day. I've really got to stick to the rules. I think a full kitchen is a stretch.
Yes. If I had my oven with the hobs and the cooker itself, then we're good.
Okay, I can do you an oven.
Okay, great. Well, we'll do an oven.
And this may be the hardest part. I'm going to have to ask you which of the eight discs you would choose if you could keep only one.
That's a tough one. I do think How Long Will I Love You will still be one of the happiest memories of the wedding day, so I think I'd have to take that one.
There's Lauren Laverne on Desert Island Discs. Two from you, Glow, as quickly as you can.
Okay, James O'Brien, Unfiltered. I just love him. I just love that. I love how we can just have 45 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour. It doesn't matter, of really good quality speech. And I think James himself comes out in that interview and you get to know him.
This is the really, Joe.
This is Joe.
Podcast,
yeah,
is it?
Joe,
yeah.
Podcast. And just think it's really, really good.
I don't know much about British Guyana. Is that a common ignorance?
It is not only that, but people say, oh, well, you go back to Ghana. And I go, no, that's in a different continent.
Yes.
That's Africa. Mm. But British Guiana, I think maybe the things people know it most for is cricket. We had some great cricket players, Clive Lloyd, etc. But the other thing is that it's where the Queen and Prince Philip went on honeymoon.
Yes, cool.
And then the other thing is possibly El Dorado might be in British Guiana. Demerara sugar, there are a few things, but in general, most people don't know. It's a very small country.
And this is a fascinating background, isn't it? Because the word British in British Guiana is, for people from there, of absolutely paramount importance. So there's a flavour of Windrush to this ignorance that we have in this country, whereas people who grew up there sort of presume we have a sense of kinship or cousinhood as opposed to ignorance.
I mean, my memories of growing up is, you know, the picture of the Queen was on the wall.
Yes.
My mother's most precious things were her English Wedgwood plates. If we got chocolate from the UK that said Cadbury's, we grew up with such a love and respect for Britain. And the fact that we would be welcomed with open arms because it was like Britain was our mother and we were the children of the Commonwealth. And so everything we did was in reverence of Britain.
There's James O'Brien on Joe. Glow, second one.
Second one is Pod Save America. Again,
I think we may have just heard a little clip of that.
Well, at least I'm young enough to know how to use a podcast. Pod Save America is these are four Democrats who worked with Obama. They were very, you know, it's very, very West Wing language. And they just talk about the news that week. And last week it was about Ford and Kavanaugh and their take on it. And it's just really smart. And I love, absolutely love the occasional swearing. So they're effortless in their F-U-C-Ks.
It's like going around to your place.
It's like, it's just like being at home so with my children.
You're a serial bad mother. Let's hear it.
I would like to note that it says a lot about the state of our politics in 2018 that Jeff Flake asking the FBI to do the absolute bare minimum to get to the bottom of a very, very credible, by the White House's own admission, allegation of sexual assault about a future Supreme Court nominee is treated as a heroic act. That doesn't seem heroic in any way to me. That seems like the obvious thing you would do.
The bare minimum.
The bare minimum.
Well, also, the whole thing.
Get you a 60 Minutes interview now.
Once, once they all were forced to go along with Jeff Flake's plan for a one-week delay, the previous day's events look all the more ridiculous.
Yes.
Making this about the performance of two people on television to determine whether or not somebody belongs on the Supreme Court, denying that the idea of suggesting that the idea of a delay is somehow giving in to a Democratic dirty trick, all of it, Lindsey Graham losing his fucking shit. Then by the time the next day and they lost Jeff Flake, they were just for it. And the fact that they turned out to have been for it tells you that all of that should have happened before the hearing.
There's Pod Save America. One last one from you, Ruth.
I think on that vein, if anyone likes that, I would suggest Romaniacs. But one that I think I have to call out just simply because it has really emotionally affected me when I've been listening is the Grenfell Tribunal podcast. Mm. And it is an incredible piece of audio making.
Is this the BBC one?
This is the BBC version that Eddie Mair is doing. Yeah. And I have to say, I really want to give them props for that because it is very emotional and they've handled it well and they have broken down the tribunal into a very kind of clear and understandable course for the listener. And it's just incredibly moving. And I just think at a time when this is going on and you know, Grenfell, you know, it's such a seminal moment, I think. It kind of keeps it relevant and it also, you know, is really what the BBC is there to do. So, you know, I will say on that sense, that is a podcast that could not be made commercially. And so, I really have a lot of respect for it.
Here's the Grenfell podcast.
Andrew Kinnear spoke to three witnesses, one of whom had led a familiarisation visit to Grenfell a few months before the fire.
Did you ask any questions about sort of building materials that had been used as part of the refurbishment on your visit?
No.
That's a matter that would be relevant to the assessment of risk for the purpose of the premises risk assessment, wouldn't it?
Possibly, but to me, the building has just undergone a major refurbishment. I wouldn't have seen the cladding to be a risk.
We'll hear more about that later.
We're nearly done, but I just want to raise one other small thing. I don't know whether anybody else saw this, but the famous BBC Brexit cast was done as a TV show. They did it jointly with the new BBC daytime show called Politics Live. So they had Laura Koonsberg at Gatwick Airport standing outside in the wind. They had Chris Mason was up in Salford in a tiny cupboard. Adam Fleming was actually on the television. And everyone had to wear headphones, even though it was a TV show. They got Dominic Raab on to be interviewed. And Dominic Raab did an interview on BBC television thinking he was doing a podcast, by which I mean it was relaxed, it was discursive, it was chatty, it was all those things that you associate much more with a podcast than you do with a formal radio show and certainly with a formal TV show. At one point, they had to move people around to sit at different parts of the desk. Well, you'd never do that on the telly, where it's all about, well, we're pretending we're not on the telly at all. And do you know what? It was fantastic. It was, even though there were a few little technical glitches, it was a real object lesson in how you can do modern journalism and you don't have to do it in the way that the BBC and others have been doing it for decades.
But it's not that new. We had Radiovision in the 70s, didn't we, when they just put TV cameras in on the Today Show and just broadcast it on breakfast TV before there was breakfast TV.
It is new, Paul. It is new because it's about the atmosphere. It's about the style of the way people talk when they're not inhibited by that formal constraint of broadcast.
I also think it's also about the in-depth nature of it. And this is something where I'm an avid listener to the Today programme, but I think the Today programme in the future, in a year or two from now, will struggle because we have such sensory overload. We get so much news that often what people want is not the news. They want the information behind the news. Now I think people are saying, okay, the headline is this, but tell me more because I feel that I'm not getting this full information from Twitter and 140 characters.
They want opinion.
I think also...
Just opinion? I don't think that's true,
They want the balances they've got now. Sorry, Glow.
Thank you for calling me Glow. I think it's also that we went through a phase where politicians were performers, where they were given media training, and we're now very cynical about that. So when we see somebody like Dominic Raab being himself, we're a lot more appreciative. And I think that's got a lot to do with podcasts, and I think that's got a lot to do with the democratisation of the media, because so many people can now have access to it, that they themselves are learning just to be a bit more human and a bit more normal. And we expect that now. We don't want the clipped performances.
We could go on forever. In fact, some people would say we have. You've been a fantastic panel, and they have, listener, accused me of saying that to every panel, but it's not true. That was really, really very interesting. Thank you, Paul Chapner. Thank you, Ruth Fitzsimons. Thank you, Gloria Abramoff. This has been the October round... broke my pen. This has
perfect
been
timing.
The October Roundtable from Radio Today, and the next voice you'll hear will be that of Stuart Clarkson, OES.
And Trevor will be back, of course, with another roundtable next month, and with more features here on the Radio Today programme in the coming weeks as well. We'll be hearing from him at the ARIAs. Stay tuned for David Lloyd's Radio Moments after this.
At james.crid.land, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, why are you in radio anyway? I had a conversation a while ago about FM-RDS, that thing which tells you what radio station you're listening to on a big screen in your car so you don't forget. For some reason, this US radio company that I was talking to didn't have RDS, and the fundamental question from the radio guy? Yeah, but how can I earn money from it? There was an interesting article recently in a US publication, Can Podcasting Increase Your Ratings? And another from Dick Taylor asking, what's radio's why? In essence, what's the point of radio? And for some reason, these two articles made a lot of things make sense. It reminded me of what drives people. Some people reading this will think that they do radio to get ratings and revenue. That's the reason why we do anything, ratings or revenue, and ideally both. Others, though, think that they do radio for a different reason, and it's a little simpler than get ratings or get revenue. Simply, we do radio or a podcast or a website or a newsletter or a conference or any type of work for one reason alone, to delight someone. If we delight someone, ratings and revenue will surely follow. But I suspect that for many people, ratings and revenue isn't why they're in the business. They're in it because they have an overwhelming urge to delight other human beings. And we can delight them by doing a good job covering stories they're interested in. We can delight them by playing songs they love. We can delight them by being good company when they need it. Global, the media and entertainment company, headquartered in London, has an obsession statement rather than a corporate one. And it's a great thing, and I've been known to read it aloud in meetings where people are violently disagreeing or getting emotional about what they do, because it's okay to feel strongly sometimes. Valerie Geller, when speaking at Next Radio about 4 years ago, said that our listeners' health and safety should be our first priority. She didn't say ratings and revenue, though she's also seen plenty of that. Instead, caring for our audiences is number one. Perhaps those who are in radio for the ratings and revenue lack the passion of those who are in it to delight audiences. And maybe, just maybe, that lack of passion results in some of what we hear on the air. So are you in the business of ratings and revenue, or are you in the business of delighting our audience? You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. Now on the Radio Today programme, here's the delightful David Lloyd. Radio Moments.
It's 10 years this week since Absolute began on FM in London, AM around the country and DAB. The programmes had been broadcast under the Virgin brand for the previous 15 years. And then...
And that song, which you made number three in our countdown, is the last song you'll ever hear on the station. You'll never hear me say again. Well, maybe. Let's get the latest travel news, and then straight after this, we're going to play the very first song on Absolute Radio. OK, it's 7.41. This is a huge moment for us, is what we've all been waiting for years, I think, not just the last couple of months. The very next song you're going to hear will be the first song on a bright future for all of us here on this lovely radio station. It's, of course, Agadoo by Black Lace. I said to my wife yesterday, wouldn't it be great just to play that and go, what have they done to the station? OK, I will speak to you next on Absolute Radio. Let's do it.
The beginnings of the Absolute Radio brand across the UK this week in 2008. Since then, helped by growing platforms, excellent programming and healthy offshoots, the audiences have more than doubled from 15.8 million hours to 34.4. Well done. Then, the Times of India had just acquired the station. Now, of course, it's owned by Bauer. And as we hear the news recently that Bauer won't be taking the weekly chart on its various big city stations, it seems the end, finally, for a tradition which dates back 34 years this week.
It was to be the first ever fully networked regular program that all the commercial stations would get together on and help promote. And it was, you know, hoped in those days that it would be eventually sponsored, which came to pass because in our first year, De Beers Diamonds were our kind of one, you know, constant advertiser. And then Nescafe sponsored it for 9 years until they decided that they wanted to move on. But it was exciting because nobody really took it seriously in the early days because we were up against head-to-head the BBC Radio's flagship program on Radio 1, you know, the Top 40. And but I thought that maybe you could do a chart show in a slightly different way, and maybe with the collective responsibility of all the marketing and promotion departments and all the commercial radio stations around Britain, we could actually do something that would be significant.
Hi there, it's David Kid Jensen here with the very first network chart show coming at you right across the nation on independent radio. Now, every Sunday afternoon from 5 till 7, I'm going to be counting up the 30 records that make up our exclusive network chart. The records you buy and the records you listen to on your independent station. We've been testing this chart over the last 6 weeks, and three big hit records that have been featuring in that time that have dropped out of today's list are these. We say bye-bye to... Heaven 1-7.
Good old Heaven 1-7. Yes, David Jensen hosting the first network chart across commercial radio. In the early days, maybe few people thought it would ever outshine the BBC in audience figures, but it did. And that day part, even now, is owned by the commercial sector. The BBC, of course, used to have their chart on a Sunday night, and this week in 1972, that programme got a new presenter.
3 weeks in the charts at number two, Children of the Revolution from T-Rex. And...
the number one, it sounds like this.
Up from number three for the first week, How Can I Be Sure? David Cassidy, number one.
The wonderful Tom Brown, who took over the Radio 1 Top 20 this week 46 years ago. He presented it for 6 years. This week, of course, famously is the one which saw much BBC reorganisation back in 1967. The light programme divided into Radio 1 and Radio 2. And last year, we had the excitement of the 50th anniversary.
And good morning, everyone. It's 50 years ago today since I welcome you to the exciting new sound of Radio 1. And 50 years on, we've even got Arnold back. When Radio 1 started in 1967, I was there to wake you up every day of the week, apart from Sunday. And today, we're recreating the first ever show. So, let's away! If this doesn't wake you up, then nothing will. This was number three this week, 50 years ago in the Radio 1 Fun 30, from The Move. It's called Flowers in the Rain.
Happy birthday, Radio 1, 2, 3 and 4 this week in 1967. Kirsty Young has vacated the Desert Island Discs chair at Radio 4 for now. She began doing that this week 12 years ago.
My castaway this week is artist and writer Quentin Blake.
For more than 50 years, his work as an illustrator has brought to life the characters and fantastical happenings in some of our most treasured children's books. His style is, in itself, almost a definition of childhood. Exuberant, subversive, chaotic and spirited.
Kirsty Young on her first Desert Island Discs. What a great presenter she's proven to be. It's a programme that's changed a lot since 1942. The original idea, of course, was from Roy Plumley, who on one occasion was stranded on his own desert island.
This is the BBC Home Service. Each week at this time, a well-known person is asked the question, if you were to be cast away alone on a desert island, which 8 gramophone records would you choose to have with you? Assuming, of course, that you also had a gramophone. This week's castaway is introduced by Eamon Andrews.
Now, please don't be alarmed at not hearing the suave, reassuring tones of Roy Plumley. Nothing's the matter with him except that he's now on the island to change it about. And thank you for being sport enough to do this, Roy.
I suppose I had this coming to me, Eamon.
Now, where to begin, I don't know. I've been checking up on Roy. Journalist, advertising man, actor, member of a male voice choir, radio announcer, producer, writer, disc jockey, chairman, collector of playbills, gramophone records, press cuttings in the theatre, and now a castaway.
Is that me?
That's you. Well, now, since we have got you on the desert island so far without your disc, would you like to...
Roy Plumley on his Desert Island Discs as aired 60 years ago. The voice of John Donne was a familiar one on Radio 2 for years, and it's 20 years this week since he hosted his last Drive Time show. John
Donne. Do you ever wake up in the morning and wish you were still Prime Minister?
No, I accept totally what had happened.
You see, I stroke this spoon very gently.
Can I bend my fork?
Look, if everyone could do it, then I wouldn't be here.
Yes, here it is again, the show the BBC put on in a week. Moment. It's the Morecambe and Wise show.
Tomorrow, John Donne receives the Radio Industry Award for the Radio Personality of the Year.
Well, we're just coming into the little landing place now, amid the rocks. Hordes of penguins all over the site. Good evening.
John Donne on Drive Time on Radio 2. And this week in 1998, he hosted his last programme after 22 years. He died 6 years later. 30 years ago now, and BBC Local Radio launches in Gloucestershire.
Hello, I'm Eric, the 6 foot Radio Gloucestershire mouse. Our engineers have asked me to tell you where you can find us on the dial. I think that's pretty silly, really, because you're listening already, aren't you? Here, I've written it down somewhere. 104.7 FM, that's across the county. And hope you'll be listening Monday, October the 3rd.
It's 6 o'clock Monday, October the 3rd. This is BBC Radio Gloucestershire. Would you please put your hands together and welcome station manager David Solomons!
No, Ken, no, that's way, way, way over the top. I just wanted to welcome everyone to our launch day.
I wonder whether they ever regretted those launch ideas. Radio Gloucestershire on air this week, 30 years ago. So, with BBC London 94.9 becoming Radio London again 3 years ago...
We're going back to the name where it all started.
The beginnings of Red Rose and Wyvern 36 years ago...
7 minutes past 7 o'clock on this day one of Radio Wyvern.
My name is Owen Oyston, the chairman of Red Rose Radio, Lancashire's first independent local radio station.
And the original Gem AM, launching in the East Midlands 30 years ago.
And that's how it's going to be on Gem AM, 24 hours a day.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David, and also to James Cridland and Roy Martin this week, and Trevor Dan and guests Ruth, Paul and Gloria on the Roundtable. We'll be back with another podcast next week.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.